traditional joint session. As usually, I will start by saying that, giving you some numbers. At the first count, we are 36 members participating in the meeting. On top of it, two members participate remotely, and three observers are following the work of the GAC, namely League of Arab States for the first time, Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie, and WIPO. Apart from that, the good news is that today I received a letter from Afghanistan requesting to join the GAC. And so we are fulfilling our quorum requirement, because there were initially some questions about that. So on the today's agenda, we have two questions and maybe one additional. The first one would be on the joint report on the joint working group activities, and the second would be on new GTLDs. And if time permits, we could briefly touch upon ICANN's Security, Stability and Resilience Initiative and the NSCERT Initiative, so to understand the reasoning behind that and the issues surrounding that. So by saying that, I'm turning back to you, Peter.
Thank you, Yanis. Thank you, Yanis, and thank you again for arranging this, one of the most important sessions that we have in the board meetings. Can I ask board members just to put their hands up to identify them? They're scattered, or we are scattered around, just in case anybody doesn't know what the board looks like. It's these ladies and gentlemen with their hands up. Thank you all. And congratulations on the progress that the GAC's making, including the new member application, Yanis. The topics that you've proposed, as always, have been agreed, and we look forward to moving into it. Thank you.
So without further delay, I will ask two co-chairs of the working group, Heather and Ray, to give us some information about the progress of work. Heather.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. I will begin by giving an overview of what the joint working group discussed on Sunday morning, and then I will turn to Ray for any additional comments that he may wish to add. In essence, the joint working group discussed a number of items. First of all, we talked about the role of liaisons within the community, and we concluded that there is value in GAC members playing this role, and a number of questions to the board did result from those discussions, and so Ray will be, I think, helping facilitate responses to those questions. Things that were discussed were, for example, were the difference between a GAC member participating in the NOMCOM versus the kind of liaison role on the board, and then to the supporting organizations and advisory committees. And also the idea that it's not always well understood the nature of the representational role that governments play, and how that relates to this liaison function. So we had quite a good discussion, and as I say, there will be some questions coming your way in relation to that. In addition, we discussed travel support for developing countries. We believe this is an important part of the work of the joint working group, because it's in support of our overall aims, which is to increase participation in the GAC. And so we hope that as part of this work, we will be able to recommend an approach for providing travel support on an ongoing or longer-term basis. We also discussed the nature of secretariat support to the GAC. Malta briefed the joint working group on efforts made by Malta and some other GAC colleagues in order to consider this issue and things that we deemed important in those considerations would be that the secretariat should be a sustainable model and should assure independence of that secretariat, and also the importance of continuity in the work of the GAC over a long term. I think that GAC consideration of the issue is really in preliminary stage, so we will be discussing this further, including on Wednesday morning. So that's the secretariat. The next item was regarding GAC advice to the board. We did agree here that it would be helpful if some questions could be drafted regarding things like the nature of GAC advice. In other words, formal versus informal, what constitutes that, the GAC issues, letters, communiques, principled documents, and so on. Also, we thought it would be useful to consider how GAC is received in terms of the process. So what happens to GAC advice once the GAC has generated it? In order to only highlight the interest in this topic, some of the meetings in the community subsequent to the discussions in the joint working group, in particular efforts related to the delegation, redelegation, and is it retirement working group within the CCNSO, raised in particular the issue of board recognition of the 2005 GAC principles related to country code top-level domains. And again, questions where I think we would need greater clarity in order to facilitate GAC provision of public policy advice to the board would be things like whether principles are formal or not, and other kinds of documents where the GAC is generating advice. And so we will, I think, further be refining questions along these lines. And so I will work with Ray to accomplish that. And, of course, GAC members. And for our part, we will need to clarify, I think, our own understanding of what constitutes formal advice and what we think is a process that makes sense. So I will just add by noting that we intended to talk about the policy development process at ICANN and how the GAC can contribute advice in such a manner and early enough that that we're really able to strengthen that process. And while we didn't get to discuss it, I would just like to note that there is a relationship between that aspect of the work and what I've just described in terms of GAC advice to the board. And so we would hope, again, to draft some questions, both for the GAC to consider and the board, that would allow that work to advance. So, Ray, is there anything you would like to add?
Yes. Thank you, Heather. Let me begin by saying that I feel that we had a very, very fruitful discussion on Sunday morning. I thought that we got a lot done. We took the tact of focusing on specific areas so we could actually make some progress. I'm glad to report that progress really is being made. In regards to liaison, the questions to the board actually will be worked on first by the board members of the working group, and then we'll figure out the best way of getting that to the board as appropriate. The GAC advice to the board, there's two pieces of that. And so when someone asks, you know, what happens to the advice when it leaves the GAC, one thought is that, well, what did the board do with it? But just as important is, how did it get to the board? What happened and so forth? So we're going to investigate exactly what is that process that's in place and how does it really work along the way. And actually, we could come back and say whether or not that this is adequate. In addition, the advice given by the GAC into the policy process, as Heather mentioned, there was quite a good discussion about getting it into the policy process at a lower time so that it can have a different impact, if you will. One of the comments that was made during the conversation was is that the longer you wait in the policy process to make a comment, the more stronger your statement has to be, and the more negotiation, if you will, is involved in that discussion, whereas the earlier in the process you are, the perspective is really brought forward and appropriate things do happen, or are more likely to happen, let's put it that way. So, as Heather mentioned, she and I will continue to work together and to move this thing forward. And I will say again, thank you very much to the GAC members for having us on Sunday. It was a very, very good meeting. And so I will turn it back to the chair.
So, thank you. Just to illustrate what Ray just said, I can inform the board members that today we had a meeting with the CCNSO. And if you recall, in Seoul, the GAC adopted a draft principles on ID and CCTLDs. And we had intersessional work with the CCNSO, and today we agreed to rename the document as a GAC interim principles on CCTLDs to send them as a GAC contribution to the working group on IDN PDP and follow up throughout the process to see how these principles or interim principles have been discussed and implemented in the policy. So that is just an example of what happened in this respect during this meeting. So does anybody want to comment or compliment the report of vice chairs? Or co-chairs. Sweden, Maria.
Thank you so much, Chairman, and thank you so much, Heather and Ray, for the report from the group. I just want to add one thing. We also talked about what happens if the advice from GAC is actually contradictional to some other of the advisory group. What happens then, and what is the process to handle that? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the board side? Peter.
Just a quick high-level comment on some of those points, and thank you for the report. I think this is the working group was set up in response to a recommendation from the President's Strategy Committee in Sydney, so it's excellent to see it underway and coming back with some concrete recommendations. Just in relation to the secretarial, I think it's very important to maintain the independence of the secretariat, but I don't think you should get the GAC should not get too hung up on the mechanism by which that independence is maintained. And if I can just share anecdotally, this was a very similar response that the country code managers had to the idea of ICANN providing them with a secretariat. Having been effectively at war over issues for a long time, there was a lot of mistrust when the CCNSO was formed, and the original leaders were very keen to have an independent secretariat but couldn't get one organised. And so ICANN simply started providing secretariat services. And the result was, you know, a huge improvement in the amount of work intersessionally and at the meetings done by the CCNSO. And within a very short time, the issue of independence has just disappeared. So I just offer that as an example. While the principle of independence is important, actually getting the work done and getting it done efficiently and on time also has to take, you know, high priority. I'm very interested in the developments in relation to advice, because there has been a tendency, I think, to confuse everything that emanates from the GAC to the board as advice. And what we would much prefer, there be a multiple, much more sophisticated kind of communication between the board and the GAC, so that advice was reserved only for those very final pieces of information which activate the bylaw obligation on the board to take this seriously and come back in writing. You know what I mean? We should have layers of communication between us, and so that sounds like a very useful development. In terms of responding to advice, as I reported at a cocktail party with the GAC last night, it's something that's concerned me, and I can confirm that the CEO and I have today been discussing the implementing of a new regime for the management of the correspondence between the board and the GAC, so that we are improving the way it's acknowledged, responded and tracked, which is something that we've done but I think probably could do better, and Rod's looking into that. I'm a little bit concerned that recently the exercise where in relation to an exercise we were asked where was our notification to the GAC of our intention to do this particular exercise, which is a bylaw requirement, but the current practice has been to rely on the presence of the GAC liaison when all of these decisions are taken. And I think that's a very much better way of doing it. I think if we can have mechanisms like that that work, rather than having to send a message to the GAC every time we're about to make a vote, that would work particularly well. And lastly, the idea about liaisons, getting involved with the different working groups, of course, is fantastic. And I totally endorse the comment that Ray makes about trying to shift the inertia of a public policy development process late in the piece. And if I could just record the steps, I can particularly well remember the first time ever in ICANN history that GAC members came out of the GAC room and actually took part in a policy debate at ICANN. I think it was in Rio de Janeiro. And since then, if I can, without risk of embarrassing him, compliment the French delegate who actively participates in these debates and makes a fantastic contribution, and as a result of getting in early, gets to grip with these issues. And I think that's a model. Trying to do it late and as a group is difficult. So I'm very encouraged by all of the developments in the working group and congratulate them and look forward to the next report.
Bruce?
Just want to add slightly to what Peter was saying about the CCNSO, because the GNSO had a similar history as well. It originally had its own budget funded by its members and paid a small amount for a secretariat, but didn't really have any policy staff behind that. And the real benefit of having a professional sort of secretariat and someone to write things up is progress between meetings, because before that what tended to happen is everyone in the GNSO is very busy in what I'd call their day jobs. While they're here in a meeting, they might be able to write some stuff, but then as soon as they go home, they're back to their day jobs and they don't do anything until the next meeting comes along 3 months later. So I think one of the big benefits that you'd receive from a more sort of stable, permanent secretariat is that even though the approval process might happen, you know, at your sort of three-monthly meetings, so it's not changing the approval process, it's the fact that you can get drafts and work done between the meetings. So when you actually get here, you've got a substantive document to discuss rather than trying to write it on the fly, in the evenings.
Thank you, Bruce. The first part of your remarks sounds so familiar about the day job. Heather, Canada.
Just a quick response to that. I think absolutely that the most important thing is that we are enabled to conduct the work that we need to efficiently and so on. It might be worth noting, though, that from the perspective of GAC members, I think we were quite concerned regarding the optics. So when you are external to the organization, that that arrangements do have that appearance of independence as well. And so I think that will continue to be a factor in our discussions.
Thank you. Alice from Kenya.
Thank you very much, Yanis. Would like to thank the ICANN board and the ICANN community, especially for resolving to get on with the meeting in Kenya despite the challenges, and note that the geographic rotation of meeting locations is an important feature, which is very unique to and special to ICANN. However, we feel that we need to really ask ourselves, what do these ICANN meetings leave behind in various regions and or countries? Kenya, for example, had ideals regarding the possible domino effect and impact that this meeting would have had in the East African region, especially in terms of understanding ICANN, in terms of increasing participation and outreach efforts, assisting with outreach efforts, both for various stakeholders, and specifically understanding internet policy and internet governance generally. I mean, as you probably all know, Kenya has offered to host the 2011 IGF. But unfortunately, we spend most of the months leading up to this meeting occupied and dealing with meetings, issues to do with security, and we feel that it's due to badly handled communication around it. And this is not to deny at all that there were credible fears around the meeting security, particularly when it touches on world's common terrorism incidents. But we feel that communicating these fears and efforts being made to ensure everyone's safety could have been handled more diplomatically and respectfully for Kenyan as a host, as well as recognition for all the hard work that went into organizing this for local organizing committee, as well as ICANN staff. We also note that nearly all of the contracted parties, registries and registrars, are missing physically. While that says quite a lot in terms of having really developed a very, remote participation, the meetings being held in New York parallel, we then question, what does this mean for ICANN processes has ICANN's foundation a commitment to introduction of competition and diversity in the DNS on the decline? Should we be introducing a competition framework, a global one? Is it time to explore the possibilities of that one, perhaps? And then what is going to happen to the process of new GTLDs with registration of GTLDs that are extremely prohibitive, especially for developing countries? We've talked about that for quite a while, but we haven't seen that reflected concretely. Finally, we'd like to congratulate ICANN's commitment to the principles of transparency, especially with the very active use of social networking tools like Twitter in terms of informing the community. But again, we emphasize that some of the issues that affect a country's prospects should be handled a bit more respectfully and sensitively, because they do tend to impact on not only the general effectiveness and efficiencies of organizing ICANN meetings, but also issues that go beyond just the internet, broader issues to do with investment and tourism. So again, we welcome you all again to Kenya, and we look forward to a very productive meeting. And hope that with the intentions of the AOC, for example, which are aimed towards internationalizing ICANN, then that ICANN begins to really take other principles of diversity and work towards understanding other perspectives and interests. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I had Thomas from Netherlands in mind. So please, Thomas.
Well, just to add up to the experience which Bruce and Peter told about the secretarial support, I think we already have this support, and I think Janice can speak to this. And tomorrow, when we have Heather told already, we have a very crucial day, I think. We have to decide, let's say, for a kind of direction in which we can have a sustainable and independent secretariat. And I think in all ways we go further, I think we will continue and even in reinforce the support we can use from ICANN in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Rod, would you like to say something?
Yes, I would. I'd like to just thank Alice very much for her comments and note that the staff was certainly, first off, the staff worked extremely hard to make sure that this event stayed in Nairobi, and that was not easy given much feedback in some of the community sharing concerns, but it was due to our commitment as well to one world, one internet, everyone connected. And also would note that when we signed the affirmation of commitment and made a commitment to the world for transparency and accountability, it actually places us in a difficult situation in many moments, because at times transparency doesn't correspond to diplomacy. And certainly that was the case even in the ICM case, where a decision was rendered and we published it. And yet we've made that commitment. So we appreciate the feedback. We tried to be very sensitive to the situation in Kenya. At the same time, we had the community members demanding of us full disclosure of any information that we might have. And so we sought to strive for a balance to support the program in Kenya, which we very much believed in and wanted to see. And we're thrilled we're here. And we're extremely appreciative of the terrific efforts by you and the Kenyan government and KNIC and the private sector here to support this very important event. And at the same time, we felt it was our responsibility to disclose any relevant information that we might have. So we very much appreciate your comments on diplomacy and seek to always learn more. And at the same time, we'll admit that we find it difficult at times to find the balance, and perhaps we didn't find the right balance. So we appreciate the feedback, and we will continue to strive to do our best. And we're thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. May I suggest that we then move on to the next agenda item related to new GTLDs. We, as we promised in Seoul, we are working on the comments on draft applicant guidebook version 3, and we're expecting to conclude our discussions tomorrow and present these comments subsequently in form of communication to the board. And now I would like to invite Mark, who is holding pen in this exercise, to walk us through the main points.
Thank you, Yanis, and good afternoon to everybody here. As Yanis has recounted, we undertook in Seoul to review the state of play with the new TTLD's initiative, and we've been working hard intersessionally in consulting and discussing in teleconferences and so on. And we are in the process of drafting a letter for our chair to send to the chair of the board, which will include advice to the board on this key area of activity for ICANN. We intend this letter to be attached to our communique at the end of our meeting this week. We are in the process of drafting, but we thought it would be useful for the board to provide a heads up on the key issues we're going to cover in the letter at this meeting. First of all, we will restate our acknowledgement of the potential benefits of an expansion of the GTLD space in terms of stimulating innovation, promoting competition and new opportunities for businesses and communities, and indeed for users. This is a well-established consensus. There isn't any administration in the GAC which is opposed to the GTLD initiative on principle. There is this consensus of support on the principle of this important development of the GTLD space which ICANN is undertaking. The letter will then go on to consider where we expect to see further work to be undertaken before the launch of the GTLD program can be made, work that the GAC believes has to be done before that point of launch can be reached. And we cover four overarching areas where work has to be undertaken, in our view. Firstly, a community consensus needs to be reached that there will be no negative impact on the resilience, security, and stability of the DNS arising from the expansion of the GTLD space. So that is the root scaling issue. Secondly, action has to be undertaken to ensure that the expansion of the number of new GTLDs does not lead to a concomitant increase in malicious conduct and abuse of the DNS. Thirdly, we will indicate broad support for the STI proposals, specifically for the Trademark Clearinghouse and the URS, but we will argue that further work needs to be done to refine those proposals with the aim of maximizing the protection of the interests of trademark owners. Fourthly, we will continue to press for the early conclusion of the economic studies that we've long pressed for, studies that will enable us to consider the relative benefits, costs, the potential for exercise of market power, the potential burden of defensive registrations for brand holders, and other related economic and financial interest issues. So we've long called for those economic studies, and we need that analysis to be completed and built on what we've already seen today, which we haven't considered to be sufficient. We recognise there is ongoing work in all those four crucial areas, and we are anxious to see that the results of that work and to be able to review the relevant documents when they issue. So we will continue to regard this as a priority area of work for the GAC, and we will work throughout this year to engage and to react and to comment and to add to the comments that we're making this week and in anticipation of version 4 of the draft applicant guidebook. The letter will go on in, to cover some points of detail. I won't go into all of them now, particularly as we haven't actually finalised our discussions of these at this meeting. We have another session tomorrow. But I think it's useful if we if I indicate two points that we will restate, and that the first one of those is that we will restate the GAC position on not allowing country or territory names in the GTLD space. The letter will also argue for the need to improve objection mechanisms and mechanisms for post-delegation deviation from the conditions for approval and, or non-objection to the use of geographical names. These are key issues that we've discussed quite a lot in during the course of our meeting and previously in our conference calls. I think just to round off, really, there's one crucial area that we will want to comment on, and that is the communication strategies for the GTLD program, with particular regard to stakeholder interests in developing countries. I hope those points that I've summarised have been helpful as I say, a kind of heads up for you before we actually finalise our position in the communique and the letter of the chair to the chair of the board that will be attached to the communique. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, please, Peter.
Thank you very much, Mark. I very much look forward to receiving that. Can I just pick up on two points that you raised? Certainly there's complete agreement by the board on the first one, that we don't do anything without making sure that the security, stability and resilience of the system is safe. You say about the more action is needed to ensure that the new GTLD program won't result in an increase in malicious character. I hope when you do send us that letter, you include the basis for the claim to start with. What is the basis for wondering whether this might happen before we start developing a program to prevent it? We'd like some indications as to what the basis for the supposition is. What fact-based studies have you done, or what information are you privy to? I know you've been consulting with FBI and other agencies. What is the basis for the suggestion that this might happen? So before we know how we can combat it, we need to know what the where it comes from. That would be very helpful. And the second point, as you've, or the third point you asked was, and I appreciate the support for the trademark protection mechanisms that you've indicated. You said that further work is going to be required to make sure that it's maximum, you know, again, detail, what further work, what areas remain unprotected. In relation to those two particular mechanisms, as I commented in the public forum, peace is almost broken out between the warring parties. And I took a great deal of comfort from the fact that they are happy. So if the GAC wants to go further than the compromise that the parties themselves have reached, it would be very helpful to know where and why. So if that can be included in the letter, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Jean-Jacques?
Thank you. I found that brief exposé extremely interesting and instructive, and of course, through our chairman, we're looking forward to seeing more of it and in detail. I have two questions or remarks. One is about the diversity of applicants. I don't know if that's a word you prefer to categories. What I'm aiming at is that there is a natural drive, of course, for business-led requests for names, for strings, but I wanted to know if you had omitted mentioning this aspect or if it will be included in your letter, ensuring that the diversity of needs is met. For instance, the needs of NGOs, of cultural entities, etc., etc. My second point is about your mention of economic studies, and I noted with care that you said the completion or completed economic studies. I beg to differ on this because I have seen...
Due to inactivity in your conference, this call will be terminated unless you press the digit 1 on your telephone. Once again...
May I state that I almost felt destabilized? but I'm not, so I'll continue with the chairman's permission. The economic study actually, as you know, has been used sometimes by certain quarters, including by people operating large business enterprises in countries of the OECD, let's say, as perhaps a pretext to delay somewhat the introduction of new GTLDs. And however legitimate the business interests may be, I, for one, consider that this is not a make it or break it consideration for ICANN. I think that the inclusion of economic data, the findings of top economists, is of course of importance, of interest, but it should not be a blockage to the implementation and at least to the finalization of the guidebook. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. So I have Rod and then Bruce.
Thank you very much. Mark, I thought I would respond to a couple of the points that you raised in your remarks. The first was the comment on the communications strategy and communications issues for new GTLDs and how important that is, and particularly to make sure that's global and really engages in developing countries as well as the more developed countries, which are more likely to have a lot more data on the program because of the rich community involvement in the ICANN processes and familiarity with the domain name system and markets. We actually would very much appreciate the GAC's formal advice as well as your assistance. You know your countries around the world. You represent over 90 countries. You understand them well. You know the wiring of your industry. You would have excellent ideas on how we can successfully build a program to deliver the messages to the key audiences in your countries efficiently. Efficiently, given that most of this obviously needs to happen not on a paid-for basis, but on a relationship basis or informative basis, and you're in the best position to be the experts on that. So we would very much like that assistance and advice from the GAC, and I'll speak with Peter later to see if we can maybe issue a letter or something formally requesting that assistance. We also recognize that there is definitely that difference between the developed countries and developing, and maybe in the responses you can suggest if you think that is the separation is appropriate with different suggestions for each category. So we would very much appreciate your help and advice on that, and take that charge and responsibility seriously. Secondly, you asked a good question about economic studies and where things stood on that. And Yiannis, Mr. Chairman, if possible, I'd like to have Kurt Pritz, our expert on that topic, provide the GAC with a quick update.
Hi. Hello. Does it work? Tech? Okay. Yeah, thank you, Rod, and I'm not sure I qualify as an expert in any regard. Understanding and agreeing with Jean-Jacques' comment that an economic study shouldn't retard progress or progressing the guidebook version 4, so we continue to work on that. ICANN's engaged with two economists to undertake additional study to build on what's been done in the past, and specifically, they've been in a potential three-phase study. They've been tasked with three deliverables. One is developing a metric or model for determining the costs of defensive registrations. Two is developing another model for assessing benefits versus costs for the GTLD program overall, costs to users and registrants. And third, trying to make that determination or model on an individual basis. So could individual GTLD applications be assessed to determine if the potential detriment outweighs the benefit, and perhaps using that model on a case-by-case basis for assessing new GTLD applications after the launch of the process. Right now, those economists are in phase one, where they're doing a survey and assessment. They've requested and received significant data from ICANN and asked very pertinent questions already, and understanding the difficulty with trying to assess what's essentially unknown, you know, the degree of innovation we're going to see going forward and the like. So the first deliverable, the survey is due in March, the middle of March. The second deliverable is timed so we can discuss some of that in the Brussels meeting in June. So I hope that's what you're looking for, Rod.
Thank you, Kurt. I mean, I take questions. I guess if there are any. Otherwise, Mr. Chairman, it's your agenda, so roll forward.
Yeah, thank you, Rod, and thank you, Kurt, for clarification. Bruce.
Thanks, Yana. So I just had a question regarding the comments about the country and territory names and the G space versus the C space. I just want to be clear I understand what the GAC is recommending. Firstly, just so I understand the hierarchy, you could probably start the hierarchy at the level of the planet. So we can have .earth, and then we have regions, and we have oceans. So we have the Pacific Ocean, the Indian Ocean. So I haven't really heard any comments about it at that level. The next level we get down to region, so we have Africa, South America. Is it correct that the region's not considered part of the CC space? In other words, Africa would be considered a G? That's a question. Then you get down to a country level. So I think that's, from what I'm hearing, is pretty clear. You're saying if you want to dot Australia, dot Australia should be treated as a CCTLD. Then you have a capital like Canberra of Australia, and I gather that's fairly... not sure whether that's going to be treated as a CCTLD or not. Perhaps you can clarify. Then you have cities like Sydney. Sydney's a big city in Australia, but I've been to two other Sydneys in the world. There could be more. So that's not something that, you know, immediately falls under any one country. But just clear on which part of that hierarchy does form in the in what you call the C space. And also, what benefit do you see in the C space versus the G space? I think from my perspective, my benefit on the G space is you have a contract and it's got standards to protect things like trademarks, which you don't have in CCTLD land because they can vary dramatically. And maybe what you could consider is trying to get a nexus between the country law and the ICANN contract. So you have a minimum standard being the ICANN contract, but then you have country law taking precedence over anything that's in that contract. So you try and get the best of both worlds, because I think we've been stuck on this with IDN CCTLDs, where the board had a lot of concern was that we're moving from a model where we had standard contracts and clear technical requirements to a model where we didn't have that, and then we had all sorts of assurances that that would be dealt with at the country level. But I'm wondering if you can merge the two and say, well, for a geographic region, it has a contract with ICANN, but for the country that's responsible for that region, say a country name like Dot Australia, that any laws that Australia passes would take precedence over anything that's in that contract. So just an idea, but I want to be clear, what part of the hierarchy do you think is in the C space that I described, and what benefit do you see of the C space over the G space?
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. I think in ICANN's history we have had witnessed number of collisions of, contractual requirements and national laws. So it's nothing new. It's always difficult, and I agree that we should try to strive for getting best out of both. But sometimes it is very, very hard. I will turn now to Hubert, and I believe that Hubert will be talking about the differences and will be answering your questions. And after that, I have Bertrand, and then we'll see Mark or somebody else. Hubert, please. Hubert from Germany.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I would like to thank Ron for his comment on communications, because I think that is really a very important issue. And for my country, I can speak on that. We made a conference in December together with our business associations organized from our ministry and the associations. We had quite a good participationship. And I think quite interesting discussions. Ron, you was the keynote speaker, and it was very informative for us, also for the community. I get very positive responses to this. And I think this is this kind of interaction we should use in the future. And my remark also would be, if there is a need, for example, what is was foreseen on the EOI there was also planned some kind of communication phase. I don't know whether there will be a decision on EOI that has to be discussed separately. But if I would recommend that we just... I at least would be prepared to organize or help organizing at least finding the addresses of the companies we could invite. And yes, and I think that would be the most important issue. And therefore, I really would appreciate if we could develop this kind of discussion within our community, because I do not do that for me, and ICANN doesn't do that for ICANN purposes. It is for our community in this context, for our businesses, that they are aware of what is happening in the GTLT process, and that they participate in the discussion. And I think that is very, very, very important. Concerning general remarks concerning geographical names, because we in our country have several communities that are going to apply for geographical strings. We as the government support these issues in general, as far as the local community also support or at least none object to these initiatives. Nevertheless, we see some questions we should discuss and develop further. And one question is, for me it's also almost some ceteris censeo, what I mentioned in this group very often, it's the question, the definition of geographic names. I think it is not covering the needs we need. Just a couple of examples. NYC is an abbreviation. It is not a geographical name according to the applicant guidebook, because only the full name New York would be the city name. We have Barcelona, BCN. It is not a geographical name. In Germany, we have one of our länder, our states, that is not Rhine-Westphalen. That is very difficult to pronounce, and nobody would use it. Everybody would use NRW, and a dot NRW wouldn't be a geographic name. Therefore, I think we need some advance in this question of definition. I hope, and the interesting thing, also our industry supports these issues. It's not that the governments want to intervene in some business cases. No, our industries also supports this point of view. And therefore, I really would ask ICANN staff to introduce some kind of mechanisms that helps to overcome this. Yes, and maybe I can come to a further question concerning our geographical name discussion. I think EOI is one issue we also are discussing, but we see it a bit difficult, because I see the problems for geographical name would be a bit different, because in the traditional system, the string or the applicant would have come to our ministry, also to our government or to the local community, and ask for a non-objection letter. And afterwards, he could apply. Now we have this process in advance, and I as a government cannot give this okay before I know what is the complete regulation on, will be the complete regulation. And therefore, I think it's a bit difficult, especially for these geographical names. Thank you.
So thank you, Hubert. Bertrand, you're next. Bertrand from France. Another question
for you. Thank you. First of all, I think the discussion we just had about geographic names shows that, as was mentioned in the panel yesterday, there is one group of strings that are generic strings, but the others are not. The brand TLDs are not generic. The geographic names are not generic. The community ones are not so much generic. And so what we're witnessing is the interest in the different types of constraints that are applicable or not applicable. And as a matter of fact, we can begin to consider that the CCTLDs were actually the first in the more general category of geographic names. and that their different regimes could apply. That's the first point. The second point is related to a very concrete question. If a city, for instance, makes a choice of applying directly for the management of the string, what is the type of contract that will be made between the city itself as the manager and registry and ICANN? Is it a different public contract than the general type of contract? The third comment is, this is going directly to the question of the economic studies. One element that is very important is a better understanding of the structure of what I don't want to call the market, but the domain space. And one element in the space is to remember that under the term competition, we're addressing very different things. One thing is clear is traditional competition between back-end registry service providers. Another layer is completely different, is competition between TLDs themselves. And here, it seems clear, and it would be great if some of the studies were exploring that a little bit more, that .IBM is not a TLD that competes with .Sports, that .London is not actually competing with .Gal. And even within generic TLDs, .Music is not directly competing that much with .Echo. On the other hand, you can consider that .Music might be competing with a potential .Jazz or .Hip-Hop or that sort of thing, like clusters. This kind of understanding of the market structure, going a little bit beyond saying this is just one market with one rule, would be very beneficial. And finally, two quick points. Not enough attention at the moment. This is not in our comments, but it's something I wanted to raise. Has been paid to the question of single registrant TLDs and the regime that is applicable to them. What are your thoughts about this, particularly for brands? And the final point is, when you look at the generic terms, of course, we have the potential to go to 63 characters in Latin alphabet. However, it is clear that in this range of potential letter combinations, the short strings that also correspond to dictionary keywords are clearly of a particular value. And not only are they of a particular value because they're short, but they also have a meaning, which is a common word. And the term common word means that it belongs to the community that uses this language. Therefore, wouldn't it be interesting to explore whether a special attention shouldn't be paid to who applies for the delegation, or how the delegation of strings that are less than X characters and are dictionary keywords would be made, because these are more a common property and there's more public interest dimension. It's a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertrand. I think that Peter wants to ask some question to Mark, and then Rod, you wanted to say something.
Thank you, Mark. I can see that you're collecting notes, and we're going to come back to you and get some results. I just wanted to put one in there and that I forgot to mention in my earlier question. You mentioned geo names to start with, and then you moved on from that to talk about the post-delegation dispute process. So I just want to tease that out a little bit. First of all, it's important to recognise that the issue of geographic names is the first time that we may run into a conflict between the board and the GAC on advice. We wrote in Mexico, after the Mexico meeting, actually formally alerting the GAC that we may be about to not follow GAC advice in relation to geographic names. And we've had a letter back from the GAC basically reasserting the GAC advice and saying, here's what we want. And that's where that matter currently sits as we've gone on to other issues. But our position hasn't changed either. So that we stand in this position of we may well be about to formally disagree with GAC advice in relation to the protection of geographic names. But to move on from that to the question of the post-dispute delegation process, yes, there is now, for the first time in the system, some post-delegation dispute processes. One of them relates in particular to communities, and it was more with my understanding that that would be the place where geographic TLDs that were in, that we had got to agreement on, for example, there was a contract in relation to a city name or a regional name, and governments had given approval to a registry operator to run that, and the registry operator then reneges on that agreement. It would seem to me that the current post-delegation process is available because that's a community in the city. But if you don't think that's appropriate, I think we could have some careful attention paid to the particular one of geographic name communities and a post-delegation process. So I guess what I'm asking for is let us know if the current post-delegation processes are not going to be satisfactory in relation to those contracts to which government approval has been a key term, and it may be that a different set of processes may well be required there. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. There are a lot of complexities in this issue and a lot of options, and we have been through all of them, and the key element here is that the government should be involved and government should have a certain precedence in decision on redelegation. When it comes to, say, city names or things which are of particular interest to government. But I believe that GAC members will go maybe more in details. Rod, you were asking for the floor.
Just very briefly, Hubert, I want to thank you very much for that outstanding event that you and the German government organized at Neue Adresse im Internet in Berlin. That was a great surprise to me at the rich group that you brought together. There were several hundred private sector leaders from legal area, companies that were interested, registry service providers. I mean, it was an amazing cross-section of industry, and we were very honored to be there. And you had a well-structured program where I know ICANN gave three different topical presentations. But that is a showcase example of what would be helpful for us with other governments around the world if you have an interest to bring your community together specifically to discuss new GTLDs. We will do our utmost to deliver staff and resources to you to speak at that event or provide materials. But I think that was actually a terrific model, so I just want to thank you very much for all the effort you put into that.
Thank you, Rod. Norway? Arnulf?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm Arnulf Storm from Norway. Just a quick response to that. we feel that those post-delegation procedures are not currently comprehensive enough to cover sort of our concerns. So that's something that should be worked out in more detail. And also just a quick comment on the geographic names, sort of also related to the question from Bruce Tonkin, is the country and territory names reading, well, interpret the existing two-letter code CCTLDs, that we feel that the exercising of the national sovereignty, the national sort of adherence to national legislation and laws is best served within the national jurisdiction currently system with the existing CCTLDs. So basically that's our opinion. Thanks.
Thank you. Mark, United Kingdom.
Thanks very much. And I think the nature of this discussion shows how some of these issues are very complex, and how diligently we on our side are trying to find a way forward. And we do seem to have reached a bit of an impasse. We'll have to think about how we move on from that impasse with regard to country and territory names. The post-delegation stuff, I think we've covered off with Ornoff and a couple of the other responses. But it's ongoing work, obviously, that we all should work effectively together to try and find those solutions. Going back to your earlier questions about malicious conduct, we and other GAC delegates are working very closely with the law enforcement agencies. We're getting a lot of valuable contributions from them, as I'm sure is the case on your side. Two colleagues of mine from the Serious Organized Crime Agency, I think they would back me up on this expectation that if nothing is done, the increase in malicious conduct will be significant if there is a significant number of GTLDs. But I'll have to consult with my SOCA colleagues on on the data to back that expectation up, if you like. On STI, we in the UK and in Europe, we've got a major problem with this. If the clearinghouse will only admit trademarks which have are backed up by substantial review, that knocks out all European trademarks, because the Office of Harmonisation of the Internal Market does not require substantive reviews to be undertaken for trademarks. And in the UK, the Intellectual Property Office has abandoned that back in 2007. So what's going to happen to all those trademarks? That's one issue. The other issue is trademark owners are complaining to me in the UK. I haven't really fully bottomed this out with GAC colleagues, that the requirement that they pay is deemed as totally unfair. I mean, they've paid to register their trademarks. Why should they register then with the clearinghouse? Why should they pay for the clearinghouse when the clearinghouse is designed to address a problem that the trademark owners themselves have not created? So there's a kind of lack of logic there with regard to payment of fees. So that is the fee. Okay, you may come back on that, but that's certainly an issue that's been raised with me in the UK. On communication strategies, I think a number of the GAC delegates can help on this. One immediate thought that comes to mind is that a number of us are involved in national and regional internet governance fora, IGFs. And for ICANN to engage with these national and regional IGFs on this issue to promote awareness of the opportunity, I think there's a ready-made vehicle there, and we can work with ICANN to inform you of those IGFs. In the UK, I'm working with the UK IGF, the European IGF, Eurodig, and also the Commonwealth. That's 50-plus countries. So we've got a platform that we can help out on in terms of enhancing your, well, complementing your communication strategies. So that's an immediate thought. Hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Can I just come back on the clearinghouse? Let's just be very clear. The clearinghouse is not a rights protection mechanism. And it's a service to help brand owners. One of the features of owning a brand is that you have to defend it. It's a piece of your property, and so owners get used to the costs of defending it. In a largely untested allegation, brand owners came forward and said, if there are a large number of registries, we will have to go and protect our brand in each of those registries. And the clearinghouse is an attempt to provide a simpler system, a cheaper system for brand owners to do what, in my view, is entirely their own responsibility, which is to protect their own brands. ICANN certainly doesn't have any responsibility to help brand owners protect their brands. That's a private property right of theirs. The clearinghouse is a mechanism to, instead of having to check 50 or 300 registries, it means they can go and do it once. Now, if brand owners don't want that service, they don't have to pay for it. The suggestion that they have some right to be in there and someone else should pay for the cost of putting a database together to protect private property rights, I think needs very careful attention. This is a service provided on the basis that they then don't have to go and fight on an individual basis, registry by registry. And as I say, it's an untested assertion, and the data that we've seen suggests that brand owners currently don't go and register in every registry to protect brands, nor are they infringed in every registry. So this is a very conservative approach to provide an assisted protection mechanism for a threat that has not actually been proven. So I think, you know, I think there's a lot of bit more thinking to do from some of the brand owners if they're starting to think that this is some right that they've got. It's an assistance mechanism to keep their costs down. Thanks.
Thank you, Peter, for explanation. Mark Silber.
Thanks, Jonas. Mark, if I can pick up further from Peter's very useful comments, it's something that was raised with me, and I think there, again, some misunderstandings around the role in particular of the clearinghouse. But more importantly, I think there were some misunderstandings around the question of substantive review. And having relooked at the paper, I can understand that misunderstanding because the language is not clear enough. As I can see it, and a position that I would accept, having come from a country where we created second-class and third-class citizens, I would hate to now start telling people from different countries that their trademarks are second or third class trademarks and they don't fit the role of a first class trademark and that passes our muster. The idea, as far as I can understand it, is that any trademark holder is entitled to put any mark into the clearinghouse database. The key issue is what the registry then does with the clearinghouse. The first option they have is to offer some sort of sunrise process. And the sunrise process means that anyone who's in the clearinghouse has the ability to pre-register, which is why I would object to anybody renaming the EOI as a pre-registration. So you simply note your interest, and on registration, you are immediately entered into the registry database as the holder of a domain for a particular name because of your trademark right noted in the database. It doesn't deal with the fact that people may have concurrent trademarks in multiple jurisdictions or in different classes. So that's the sunrise option, and with the sunrise, you would want it to be absolutely identical. The other option that's used is an IP rights protection, which means that when you're in the database, as soon as a string is entered as a registration under a new GTLD, a notice will go to the potential registrant to say, this name is registered in our clearinghouse. Somebody has a trademark. We haven't tested the veracity of the trademark. We haven't tested the trademark to assess whether it comes from a substantive review jurisdiction or not. But there is a trademark in the in the clearinghouse database which matches the name that you are looking for. Do you want to continue, bearing in mind that you may then be challenged? Now, that would take out the typical defense which is raised in the vast majority of UDRP cases, which is, I didn't know. They're a small entity in the UK. I don't live or work in the UK. I don't do business in the UK. I have no idea of their trademark. My name was generated through my independent thought and my own innovation in my own country. I wasn't aware. I had no intent to infringe a trademark. I simply wanted to do business on my own. That defense is taken out with the IP claims, and the person knows that they potentially are infringing and that they may get a complaint or some sort of dispute process launched against them. At the same time, the IP claim will notify the trademark holder whose name is in the clearinghouse that somebody is registering a name which matches the string they've entered into the clearinghouse, and then the two parties can make their choice. Now, if you have a trademark in the name Widget, but you have no interest in protecting your trademark in music or blog or any number of other new GTLDs, you may let the majority of registrations go because you don't really particularly want to enforce. But when it comes to your industry, food, for example, or engineering, then you would pursue aggressively. If you haven't registered yourself yet, you would pursue that potential infringement very aggressively. And my personal view is that an IP claims process is the better way to go, and maybe the next version of the DAG will push in that direction. But the other thing is that registries are entitled, when dealing with entries in the clearinghouse, to then decide what to do with them. So we've seen different rules. For example, in the last round of new GTLDs, we saw a requirement in one of the clearinghouses that you have to have had a trademark for 5 years to avoid some of the circumstances we had in the .eu situation of people having some sort of land rush around trademarks prior to the domain registration period. So you could put, as a registry, and we're not going to impose, in my view, we shouldn't impose on a registry that obligation. We can suggest to them, you may want to have a minimum 1 year waiting period. You may want to consider substantive review versus non-substantive review. But once the name is in there, the registry then has a choice of what to do with it and how to do with it, and a responsibility to do that appropriately, fairly, ethically, and inform everybody of the mechanisms that they're going to use. What I think would be the most useful thing to come from the GAC is if you had some particular thoughts as to what the most appropriate mechanisms are, and you wanted to give us advice as to what you felt was the most appropriate from the relatively detailed exposition I've given, I think that would be incredibly useful because it points us in a direction rather than saying, there's a problem, do something about it.
Thank you, Mike. I have Hubert in line, and then I'll give European Commission, and then depending on time, we're getting rather close to the end of the session. Hubert, please.
Yes, thank you for these interpretations and discussions on trademarks, because I think it's very important for us. And I also welcome the discussion we had during the last one and a half year, because I think there's a very positive development, and I think nobody would contradict to this. I just also want to remark that what the regime we are developing is not only for the trademark holders. I see it also as a regime that mitigates problems we may face concerning legal conflicts. And we are developing a regime that is avoiding legal conflict. I would like to point out that the involvement of private arbitration bodies we are discussing now and we are developing now, they do not include in any case decisions by the appropriate courts. In many cases, arbitration bodies may provide good indications. They may, if both parties agree upon it, deliver quick and less costly decisions, what also we appreciate very much. But nobody is obliged to use these arbitration bodies, and therefore it cannot be excluded that third parties appeal to the public courts that are not bound by the decision and the regime of this private arbitration bodies. Therefore, it is, from my point of view, decisive that ICANN's IP protection mechanisms meet the requirements of the national and international trademark laws and regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Hubert. I would like to indicate that with Peter we were suggesting that we go about 15 minutes over time. We have at least one important issue to cover which hasn't been touched yet, that's EOI. We had an extensive discussion about that. But since it is about 20 minutes to go, I would like to encourage those who speak be relatively brief. European Commission, then France, and then Dennis Jennings, who is asking for the floor.
Very briefly, Mike, thank you very much for this explanation. I want to take home 2 points and make one point. I appreciate that you said you don't want a two-class system. And having been involved in the first one had in the sea space dealing with 27 different regimes, that's something we had to avoid as well. I think that is a result we really have to avoid, because otherwise you go regime picking and it's going to be very problematic, number one. The second thing, I would be reluctant to follow your invitation, but we haven't discussed it, to propose something. That's really your job, to propose a mechanism, because that is your field. So I would there be rather reluctant. But I take home, we don't want a discrimination. We don't want a two-class system in trademark holding. We want an open, undiscriminated access to the system. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. In the reversed order, Dennis Jennings will be speaking about economic studies, and then we will go to EOI. Dennis, please.
Thank you very much indeed. Yes, I'd like to make a small comment about the economic studies. I'm no economist, but much of the work I've seen is describing an economy that I don't recognize. It seems to be based on classical views of consumer goods, and doesn't seem to take into account any of the particularities and strange behaviors that occur in the domain name space, and the nature of the domain name industry, the nature of a domain name, the conflict with trademark rights, and so on. I've seen some recent work which is much better. But my point is that I'm a little surprised about the passivity of the request for more economic studies. Most nations, even Ireland with the Economic and Social Research Institute, have very powerful economic study mechanisms available to the administrations, much more powerful with much more money spent than ICANN could possibly spend in this area. So it would be very useful input and advice from the GAC if you were to go to your Economic and Social Research Institutes, our equivalent, and ask them to do a modern study of the economics of the internet, economic and social study and its impact, and feed that into us, rather than passively ask us to do more and more studies in a situation where we're extremely budget limited. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Franz, that's right. EOI.
Yeah, getting the EOI. I still would like to maybe get an answer later on at an appropriate time on the question of if a public entity applies for a TLD, what is the regime that will be?
The answer is it's a GTLD contract.
So, okay, like dot post. Okay. Good luck. Okay. So, on the EOI, first of all, I think the GAC is expressing gratitude to the board for having following the advice of waiting until Nairobi to allow community interaction. There has been a tremendous amount of work done by the staff to summarize the comments that have been put online, and also to try to improve the formula that was made. However, from the last 3 days and from the various comments before, it is clear that today there is no consensus in the community on either a yes or a no regarding the current proposed EOI. And unless I'm mistaken, my understanding is, or our understanding is, that it might be the case within the board itself, that it is very difficult at this stage to decide fully yes or fully no, because the discussion on the EOI has raised very interesting elements. It has actually nurtured the debate. However, the current mechanism still raises considerable difficulties that I'd like to highlight. The interesting thing about the face-to-face possibilities and the fact that we are present here is that a few points have emerged. They're not consensual, but it seems like a trend. The first thing is that a certain number of actors who were initially supportive of the EOI have actually changed their minds and have had second thoughts, including the most ancient public applicants, who are now considering that it may mostly add further delays. The second point is that, as we were seeing, as Rupert has mentioned, the EOI in this current form is creating a differential treatment from the treatment that certain types of applicants might have in the current DAG. So therefore, it is not just an introductory mechanism. It is changing the balance, favoring some actors and disfavoring others. And so the balance in this respect has to be taken into account. The third element is, as we said yesterday in the panel, the discussion on the EOI has somewhat exacerbated, or in any case highlighted, some of the problems that we may not have seen clearly in the current DAC regarding fairness of treatment among the different types of applicants or the different types of strengths. And finally, and probably most importantly, the more it goes, the more it seems to be recognized in the community that this is, of course, not a mere data gathering exercise, but that it is de facto not only a pre-registration, but actually the registration phase of a new round, which has a certain consequences in our discussion. The result is that a completely separate EOI from the round does not really make sense, because either it is starting before the DAG is sufficiently finalized, and then it is in contradiction with the requirement that the round starts when those issues have been solved, or it waits until all the issues have been solved, and then it is just the beginning of the round, which is actually the direction it is taking. And therefore, In this respect, what it is pointing towards is that the EOI is necessarily connected to the actual round, and if it is connected to the actual round, it's actually the first step in the round, so why not focus rather on how to finalize these elements in the DAG and maybe explore further what the first step in the round can be, taking the lessons from the EOI discussion. And finally, it is important to recall that the GAC has expressed, particularly in Seoul, the need for exploring track differentiations and categories, and we want to share with you the fact that we intend to further push the idea of having a cross-community working group or informal working group that will explore this notion of track differentiation to see whether it can be positively contributing and report at least 3 weeks before Brussels so that it can feed into the general discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertrand. Since we are very, very close to the end of the meeting, I think if I will see whether board members would like to react on information. Peter, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking at you, Bertrand, but I'm not sure that this properly goes to you. You will remember, Mr. Chairman, that the board was going to consider the EOI at its February meeting, and we received a request from the GAC for a further time. I think it's only a fair question now to put to the GAC, what have you done with the time that we granted you? What has been the processes that you've used, and what are the conclusions that you've come to as a result of this extension of time?
If I may...
Thank you, Peter, for the question. We had an opportunity to spend more than an hour on the question of EOI on Sunday, where it became relatively clear that majority of the GAC members present in the meeting expressed skepticism of the usefulness of the EOI, taking into account that preparatory work for the launch of the new round seems to me that is converging relatively well to the end point. And it was felt that EOI was adding an additional complexity to the process, especially taking into account that there is a sentiment that things are converging rather than resolving problems. It is different from situation which was in Seoul, where perception was that everything falls apart. So this is a one point. Another point, we had an opportunity to engage with the rest of the community on Monday, where we had an opportunity to express our concerns, and so I think that the board, which will take decision on Friday during the board meeting, and the board members who will present in that session and that exchange will be able to take decision, whatever decision will be, being much better informed about community sentiments on this thing. And I think that is the value of not taking a rush decision but taking a better informed decision.
Just to follow up, because Mark, you didn't mention that as coming in this letter. Is EOI going to form part of your advice to us before Friday?
Communique.
In the communique, thank you. Yanis, I wonder if it would be helpful if I could ask Bruce Tonkin, who chaired the working group, just to report, and I'm particularly interested in this suggestion from Bertrand that there's no consensus. Bruce, is there consensus around any aspect of EOI?
I don't think there's consensus about any aspect of ICANN, actually. I think there's always different views. I think some of the things that came out in the discussion in the panel was, one, an EOI does give additional information, but it's at the expense of an additional step in the process. So some of those that are keen to make things go faster would rather there not be an EOI because, you know, adding a step. Those that want to proceed carefully, and that's certainly some of the board, like the idea of an additional information step before, you know, committing to the final process. So that's kind of, I guess, the two trade-offs there. It's a trade-off of the additional information versus the additional step, and you naturally lengthen the process. One of the things that became clear in the session was the timing of when you would start and finish an EOI with respect to how stable the final, or how stable the draft applicant guidebook is. So Some were afraid that the EOI might start before the draft applicant guidebook dealt with some of the substantial issues. And I think, as the board and others have reiterated, that's not the plan. The plan is that the draft applicant guidebook should address the overarching issues that have been raised so far. But then the problem is, how do you measure the level of consensus on those overarching issues before you can start the EOI? So let's say we published a new draft of the guidebook, so it was June. We'd have probably need some measure after we publish that to see, you know, is there general support, like nobody left loudly screaming, if you like, or do we still have the same people screaming really loudly and therefore we haven't actually addressed the overarching issues? So it's hard to make that call until we actually publish the next guidebook. And so then the question is, how long should we wait? What's the timing? Is the EOI start 1 month, 2 months, 4 months, 12 months? I don't think there's clarity around that. And the fourth aspect is about communications on new GTLDs. Those in developing countries feel that ICANN should start now more broadly communicating about what new GTLDs are. And those in developed nations feel that ICANN doesn't need to do that right now because they already know that new GTLDs are happening since June of 2008. They're saying, don't tell us any more until you can tell us what the final rules are, how much it's going to cost, and what date. So there's a different information requirement, if you like, and level of understanding between the developed and developing world. So I think that's something else that's emerging, that we need to improve outreach in the developing world about the concept of new GTLDs, but at the same time understand that the real value of the communication plan for some of the developed world, and especially a lot of the attendees at the ICANN, is you know, tell us when and how much and what the rules are.
So thank you, Bruce. We are...
May I have some Rob, remarks?
Please.
Right. First, I want to thank all of you for the incredibly valuable information that you've shared with us today in your continued advisory role, and it's very vital to our success. And I want to share one last piece of information with you, or an observation that I feel obligated to share as the CEO of ICANN, particularly under the affirmation of commitments, paragraphs 3 and 9.2, which refer to the security of the domain name system. Paragraph 3 refers to ICANN's role and requirement to preserve the security of the domain name system globally. What I want to share with you as the representatives of many countries of the world is that the domain name system is under attack today as it has never been before. And I have personally consulted with over 20 CEOs of the top registries and the top registrars globally, all of whom are seeing increasing attacks and complexity of attacks and whom are extremely concerned. The domain name system is more fragile and vulnerable today than it has ever been. It could stop at any given point in time, literally. It has never stopped. It has been slowed down through attacks, and the Kaminsky exploit that was disclosed only 18 months or so ago could have been used to fundamentally cripple the domain name system. That system is used 1 trillion times per day, and your economies depend upon it. It can stop, or it can materially be damaged and harmed. It is under attack. Parts of that system are only in your countries, and I'm going to be writing you a letter and asking you for what is happening in the domain name system in your countries, because we're seeing new levels of wildcarding that's occurring at the telecom service provider level, synthesis of domain name system providers interrupting DNS requests and providing false data and information for commercial or other purposes. But the system is under full-scale attack. And I am extremely concerned as the CEO of ICANN. I want to let you know that. And we're all in this together. And I have met with the heads of cybersecurity or technical infrastructure of 3 of the largest countries on the earth who are concerned as well. I'm sharing this because I'm gravely concerned, and we need your help. So we're going to be asking you for your advice on domain name security and on the DNS cert, and what can be done, and particularly to learn the lessons from your certs as well. What has been accomplished in your countries? I have experience with certs in several countries, but we need to learn more. So that will be coming, and I just want to express my concern to this group because I don't want to wait until Brussels. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. Looking forward to receive your letter and engage on this subject. We had today a long session on the issue. We engaged with Greg Retrie, and it was a very useful conversation. There are some questions, particularly on the financial side of this initiative, but certainly GAC members were positive about efforts ICANN deploys in this respect. So taking into account that we are 15 minutes over scheduled time and that we need to leave premises, at least according to security briefs we received before the meeting, so I would like to bring this session to close and thank board members for being present and spending time with the GAC. I would like also equally to thank GAC members for active participation and the members of representatives of community for being present and listening in. Thank you very much indeed. I believe we will meet next time in Brussels and looking forward to further cooperation. Peter, back to you.
Yanis, thanks very much. In the interest of time, all I will say is yes, I agree with what you say. Thank you.